Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
G'day. Thanks to Vanessa from Banksia, and I'm Rob Trojan again.
And Megan McHugh.
And welcome aboard the Starship Zero-G, science fiction, fantasy and historical radio for episode number 1599. Oh, we'll be in the 1600s soon.
Oh, wow.
Entitled Hall H Odyssey. Our podcast title is, and this is convoluted, but that's all right, Potter C Bits and Robs. We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of the Wurundjeri, from which we broadcast from and to, and to elders past, present and future. Yeah, so Christopher Nolan's epic adaptation of the Odyssey.
Yes, it continues to trundle on in the cinemas. Mm.
3,000 years after, and people are still arguing about Homer. Yeah. and Helen of Troy, for that matter. And that's all sent me off on my own, the Odyssey, mm. As I survey other large and small screen adaptations, which I've been doing. It's actually quite fun. Do you know how you do that? You know, you see a film or you read a book and it inspires you to go off.
The different rabbit holes.
Yeah, rabbit holes in my case, because I've gone down so many of those things. Like, you know, I got fascinated by General Custer's debacle.
Oh, yeah.
And the Zulu Wars and all sorts of things have just pulled me off in all these directions, and I've gone and found all sorts of things. So I recently rewatched director Mario Camerini's 1954 movie Ulysses, mm. which I swore blind that I actually had in my collection at home, but I don't. It's because I got the CD.
Ah.
And that's what sort of piqued my visual interest. The Odyssey-based storyline of Ulysses, because, of course, Ulysses is the Roman translation of Odysseus, more or less. Mm. It's familiar enough, but I don't remember much about the rest of the movie beyond the bits that sort of embedded themselves in my nightmares at the time.
Yeah.
I think the drunking, laughing Cyclops getting his malevolent eye burnt out by a smouldering, sharpened tree trunk led the way on those nightmares. There's a longer cut of the film that may be more graphic, I don't know. But in that one, it was bad enough when Polyphemus ate the crewman.
Ooh.
In this version.
Okay.
The camera cuts away. It's not in 54, but it was effectively reflected in the horrified expressions and postures of his captain and shipmates.
Well, it's what you don't see.
Yeah,
that's the real,
And in that version, in that adaptation, they don't muck around roping themselves beneath the bellies of the sheep when they escape from the cave. So it's like they tie themselves under the sheep so that the blind giant can't feel them as he lets the flock out for the day. They just leg it amongst the flock, you know, oh, run off. In Nolan's version, they tie foliage to their own backs and go on all fours. Mm. So when the giant bends down, he can't quite discern them from the sheep. Obviously not Merino wool, though. And then the 1954 film Cyclops is basically just a bloke in a mask with some judicious editing and giant props for little men to work with.
What?
You know that old trope?
Like, yeah.
So there's like some giant legs that Kirk Douglas walks up to and hands a bucket of wine up as Cyclops sits on his giant bed. I must have seen all this in black and white.
Yeah.
Which is sad because it's really quite a colourful film. I've rewatched it in colour, and that was rendered it even more scary. And I'm not surprised that it gave me the heebie-jeebies, because back in the day, that Cyclops sequence was directed by Giallo pioneer Mario Bava, who also reportedly did a chunk of the cinematography and served as uncredited co-director. It's a troubled production.
Yeah.
Camerini, the director, was a last-minute sub from the world of domestic comedies.
Gosh, nothing's changed in all the years of Hollywood, has it?
And he was dropped in when renowned director George William Pabst quit the project. So
right.
German director.
Very troubled.
I could see Burt Lancaster playing Ulysses back then.
Mm.
No shade on Kirk Douglas, though, who earnestly acts his heart out. He's all hubristic bravado and athletic bouncy dash and cheeky grin and swashbuckling, except when he's supposed to be under the lotus-eating influence of Circe, played by Silvana Mangano, who by turn smoulders along in the dual role of the sorceress and Odysseus' wife Penelope.
Oh.
Yeah, which is actually a nice touch, you see, as it gets the actress back in play.
Yeah.
When she would otherwise be parked home in Ithaca, you know, doing the weaving and unweaving of her.
Yes. Her, at the loom.
Father-in-law's shroud, you know, that dodge, to stave off the boorish suitors vying for her hand and the kingship of the island too, which people forget.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they want to marry her for a reason.
Yeah.
Circe transforms the swine back into men. The original transformation happens off screen, which is convenient.
Yes, very convenient.
There's a bit of fog machine mist and a jump cut.
They make it work.
And she says, and she's really knowing about this, she says, it was much easier to do than you think, to turn them from swine, from men into swine. And she gets a chunk of the narrative in the 54 film as that they normally handle with Calypso doing it.
Oh, okay.
In the epic poem. And she also facilitates Ulysses seeing and talking to his mother and Achilles, amongst others, in Hades. So, you know, there's this whole cautionary tale there.
Okay.
They do that in the Nolan film, but they don't actually have him talking to Achilles, which is a pity because Achilles, you know, he trades his life, basically a longer life at home, for a short but glorious life. You know, which is a very ancient sort of classical Greek kind of thing. There's actually a word for it and all that. But when he's actually in hell, he says to Ulysses, it wasn't worth it.
Mm.
I'd rather be at home with my family. That's in the poem.
Oh, a lesson. There you go.
And, you know, why waste a sorceress if she can do that too? And you can actually – this is really strange. When you read The Odyssey, or perhaps hear it performed, I don't know. You can kind of hear the mechanics of the story being worked out. It's like, well, we'll do this here because it makes sense.
Yeah.
And this gets us out of this plot hole. And it's 3,000 years, and you think you can still hear it.
Yeah.
And have you ever thought about how recent 3,000 years actually is? Let's say, for convenience sake, that the human lifespan's about 50 or so years, obviously shorter in previous times.
The oldie, yeah.
Until you get to biblical times and then everyone lives for 500 years. So if you multiply that out, if you do the math, that means we're only separated from the notional Trojan Wars, by about 60-odd generations. That doesn't actually seem long.
I mean, it still seems like a while.
In geological terms, but it's nothing.
That's true, that's true.
So, you know, we're not that distant from them. Anyway, Kirk Douglas is quite moving in a literally restrained way at some stages when he's tied to the ship's mast, enduring the torturous song of the sirens, taunting him with the voice of his wife, and when he's mourning the death by drowning of his crew. And speaking of escaping hooks and the suitors, Ulysses outright massacres them when he gets home. And the maids as well, he does not massacre those. In the poem, Odysseus does.
Yeah.
But it's not actually him who does it. It's Telemachus in the poem who, instead of hacking them apart with swords, like Odysseus wants, ties them up and hangs them. You know. Now, it's very interesting. There's complexities to this. Emily Wilson translates what the maids are and the servants are as slaves.
Yes.
So that means that they're basically killing people, executing people who have no agency, really.
Yeah.
And that does not sit well in any of the modern adaptions.
No.
They don't do it in the Nolan one. They don't even actually touch much upon slavery.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah.
But at the same time, if you cut that out, why wouldn't you? Why would you make Odysseus any worse than he already is as a veteran of the sack of Troy? And he is very much in the Nolan film, very much engaged in that whole post-Troy siege disorder thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole lot of stuff behind there. But I'm telling you about that now so you can go and check it. Because I read that in the poem and I'm going, you bastard. Mm. You know, why? This is a horrible thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't but back in the day, and I'm not saying it's justified, back in the day it might not have passed. And then you read stuff by Euripides with the Trojan women and so on, and there were people who were sensitive. He's a bit late. A lot later than Homer, though, who were sensitive to the plight of women and civilians in these wars.
So, you know.
But this is all just coming off the top of watching the film.
Yeah.
What else was there in this that I wanted to mention? The wedding competition. Now, that's another point in all of the adaptations that you see. The successful suitor is determined by who can string the war bow and shoot an arrow from a row of axes. Mm. And there's all sorts of thoughts about how that would actually be done. You can't shoot them through a solid axe. Mm. No way. Mm. I don't care how strong you are.
No.
But you could shoot them between two axes crossed with a rope underneath and shoot them through the triangle.
That's what you're meant to be aiming for. Yeah, interesting.
The other way to do it is you take the handles out of the axes and you line them up and shoot the arrow through those holes, which is a prodigious feat. So you get, you know, all the axes in the
room. Yeah.
You know, Robin Hood or Luke Skywalker wouldn't be able to do that easily. But, of course, Ulysses is assisted by the gods, so, you know. And I'm not an archer, but I've watched lots of YouTube videos, and I know that the suitors are not going to be able to string the bow the way they try it, which is just put it on the ground in front of them, putting the knock into the dust, which is not a great idea, in the dirt, and then just trying to spring it. You've got to sort of thread it between your legs and pull it backwards against your calf.
It's quite difficult.
Yeah, it is. I've actually done that, not for a long time, though.
Yeah, it's very hard, actually, to string a bow.
It's why crossbows were invented.
Ah.
Yeah. Have you tried that?
Yeah. I did. I did like a longbow making course once, like a workshop.
Really? So many surprises.
I also go down rabbit holes for other hobbies. But yeah, it was a great workshop, and part of it is, you make the longbow, like you sand it and all of that. And then at the end, you know, you have the special string, and then you string it all up, and then you can use it after the workshop. Hmm. So yes, I was terrible. I'm not good, but it was a great experience.
Of course, these are recurve bows, so that's a double.
Slightly different,
slightly different. Nevertheless, and the little scene where faithful dog Argos recognizes disguised Ulysses in the kitchen after 20 years.
Yeah,
misty eyed, always at that. He's a little less feeble in the 1950s version than he is
in the lore, yeah.
And I'm not even sure he actually just dies on the spot like he does in the...
Yeah, I feel like... Yeah.
Spoilers. Chief amongst...
Age-old spoilers.
Yeah, 3,000 years, people. Chief amongst the suitors is Anthony Quinn, who looks, Zorba the Greek. From the Cousin Zykus story in the movie, looking a tad uncomfy in the short tunic, but he's the most boastfully cunning of the suitors. And there's a lot of really colourful kit in this movie, which is actually a lot more colourful than polychromatic, a lot more polychromatic than the monochrome of Nolan's deliberately post-apocalyptic bleakness.
Yes.
Don't you wish sometimes that we were post-apocalypse?
Mm.
I think it'd be fun. Okay, the film's a De Laurentiis one and Carlo Ponti production. It shows. I can't help wonder what kind of film it would have been if Pabst had stayed on board.
Yeah.
What would the 1954 Odyssey be like if a German director had actually done it?
And they'd let him do his vision.
Because the Mediterranean was big for Germans back in the day. Mm. It was a nice holiday, sun-drenched holiday. Destination. And perhaps a happy ending for Ulysses and Penelope in this version wouldn't have been quite so ambrosia sweet as it is. it's a happy ending. And the dubbing is really noticeable because the international cast were all speaking in different languages when they were filming. An important blip in my memory of this film, and I'm glad I rewatched it. Where did I rewatch it from? Oh, God knows. Sources, shall we say. Because it's actually hard to get.
Yeah.
Hard to stream and everything. Sorry. You have to go on an Odyssey to do it. It led to watching another film, though, that I'll get to a bit later, or perhaps not. But that was Jean-Luc Godard's Contempt.
Mm.
Mm. All right, let's hear a track from that 1954 Ulysses movie.
Yes.
And this is basically the main title.
Yeah.
Oh, who's the composer on this one? Remind me.
The music composed by Alessandro Cicognini.
Hi, this is Bear McCreary, and you're listening to Zero G.
You are indeed, and we just heard a track from the 1954 Ulysses, and that was composed by Alessandro Cicognini, who was very well known for being quite a prolific composer for film scores. Like, he's done loads and loads and loads, mostly Italian films.
I wonder if there are there any in there that's like Hercules meets Ulysses or you know, Samson versus Jason at the Argonauts.
Not that I can see, but
the Peplum movies, sword and sandal movies.
He's certainly done a lot. It wouldn't surprise me if he did have a few in there.
So we move from the Odyssey to Hall H.
Yes.
At San Diego Comic Con.
Well-trodden ground.
So we saw lots of things. We didn't go there, but we saw lots of things online about the interesting announcements, bunches of trailers.
Yeah.
Did you see the one about Matchbox, the movie? Matchbox Cars?
Oh, gosh. They'll do anything, won't they?
I'm not sure how you get a film out of Matchbox Cars. I think the gag is that the characters in it played Matchbox Cars together as kids.
Right.
And they get some ideas from it. It's the very thinnest of plots. Although The Rock and Chris Evans did manage to get a joke out of enlarging toy cars in Red One. And size-changing cars are a whole thing in the Ant-Man movies.
Yes.
But it looks like there are a lot of vehicles in this movie, along with John Cena and Jessica Biel.
Fun.
And did you see the Lord of the Rings one?
Oh, I didn't. What was the Lord of the Rings one?
Next season.
Yes.
Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
Our Ron is about to forge the One Ring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I hope somebody doesn't tell him to hang it on a chain around his neck instead of popping it out there on a vulnerable finger. It looks like Gandalf is finally properly dropped in this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more Galadriel kicking orc ass.
Of course.
And we're going to see some Nazguls and their dark steeds.
Okay, fun.
Yeah.
All right.
Did you see any ones in particular that you liked?
I mean, for me, mostly I'm just always interested in kind of hearing about what Marvel's next move is going to be, honest, which is what sort of mostly caught my eye and seems to have been what caught the internet's eye as well.
Yes, bravo. Hey, what about the Carrie series?
Yes. So I think one reticence I have about another go at Carrie, because we have, of course, the Sissy Spacek one.
Right.
Then there was also one that starred Chloe. They did another reboot one.
Oh, really? See, I didn't know that.
Yes, they did. I can't remember her name. I feel very bad. It had Grace Moretz in it.
Oh, really?
And Julianne Moore.
Uh-huh.
And then they're having another run at it as a TV series, which is possibly going to give it more breathing room.
Yeah.
But, I mean, also the story of Carrie, I mean, it's a lot of bullying. It's a lot of uncomfortable mother-daughter dynamics. Like, that's a lot to go through for a miniseries.
So it's a novel originally, isn't it?
Yes, the Stephen King. I think it was his first, actually. And so, yes, Amazon is having another crack at that IP. So, I mean, look, I think TV series is probably an interesting way to go. It's also been developed by Mike Flanagan, who I do think has had a lot of success in the past with various different horror series and adapting things into very interesting takes, a bit more modern maybe sensibilities in there. So I'd be intrigued to see how that unfolds. And I do like to see, I mean, look, we're going to be having Stephen King adaptations until, you know, the end times. So let's see what they've got.
It's written in the book of, was it Revelations or, you know, the last book, the apocalyptic book.
Yeah, so
there will be an adaptation of a Stephen King novel.
Exactly. I think there's a lot of space to do it really smart and well and sort of update the material to maybe use a more modern setting to send some interesting messages. So I'll be intrigued to see how they do it.
And Resident Evil, another reboot of that.
Yes. So this one I'm particularly interested in. So Resident Evil is not Resident Evil.
Resident Eagle.
Imagine.
Back to Middle Earth.
Resident Evil is Zach Cregger's latest horror film. Mm. Zach Cregger, of course, of Barbarian and the more recent Weapons.
Seen them both. Terrified by them.
He's great. He's very much found his realm to operate in the horror genre. Mm. Weapons, of course, got Amy Madigan her Oscar and very well received kind of critically and commercially. So his latest project, Resident Evil, comes out on September 17th.
Oh, yeah.
And it is, I guess you could say it's the latest in the Resident Evil horror franchise, which did spawn from the video games, but technically this one is sitting more in the space of being a reboot. So it is based on the game sort of world of Resident Evil 2.
Oh, yes. Remember there's a game?
Yeah. So that's probably what I'm most familiar with, to be honest, even though I know it's been firmly in the hands of, like, the Mila Jovovich, Paul W.S. Anderson.
What, they do seven movies or something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, definitely they had a good run with it. But... yeah, so I think this one's sort of springing off originally from that source material of the video game. So this one, the world of Resident Evil 2, which came out in the late 90s, but this movie will be actually set in modern times, so it takes place in the now, but the events of the new movie will be happening sort of during the Raccoon City outbreak that happened in Resident Evil 2, the game.
Raccoon City.
Right. It's a great name. So Austin Abrams will be starring in that one as Brian, who's this courier trying to get a package to Raccoon City General Hospital, but of course has to accidentally survive a zombie outbreak. As you know, just workplace acid.
Well, he's getting double pay.
Well, you know, well, he's getting something. Maybe double tapped. Who knows? But... so this one does look very bloody, zombified, oh, yeah. fun.
And creepy.
Very creepy. It's like a snowy setting. It's quite dark. There's loads, plenty of blood even in the trailer. It does look creepy as well, like they're trying to get some vibes going. But obviously it's mostly going to be sort of an action survival type of situation. There was a series kicking around at Netflix a few years ago, but it seems like this is their... new swing at the Resident Evil story. And I do like the idea of it being a new character or an original character and story, but just set in that world of Resident Evil and kind of what happens at that.
It doesn't have to be, you know, the main characters we've seen. So
exactly. It doesn't follow the narrative of the games, nor does it follow the narratives of, you know, that we're familiar with. This is something fresh. So keen to see Cregger's take on Resident Evil.
And this is filmed for IMAX, I believe.
Oh, I didn't know that, yeah. But great. Bring
which
it
is,
on.
Which is fascinating because...
as Nolan intended.
As Nolan intended. Down here in Melbourne, you know, we've got the only IMAX in the Southern Hemisphere that you can show these as Nolan intended,
as
on,
Nolan intended.
On film and yeah. not being digitally...
yes, 70mm which is IMAX, yeah.
Quite amazing because you've got people flying in.
I know. I mean, it's that baby's booked out for months.
Or rowing. Yeah. In boats. Yes. Also, horror-wise, DC has got a Clayface movie.
Yes. What are your thoughts on Clayface? Well, it's an interesting direction.
I know the character, and I thought, yeah, okay, I can see it's going to be a body horror movie
mm-hmm.
directed by James Watkins, who's an English filmmaker, mm-hmm. Eden Lake, Woman in Black, did some Black Mirror episodes and so on.
I mean, great, yeah.
Yeah, great.
All solid stuff, to be honest.
An interesting variation because, I mean, they've had, yes. like Superman, Supergirl,
yep.
and now this one. This is quite an off sort
it's
of...
it's a real left turn,
pivot,
right?
Yeah.
In vibe as well as sort of, yeah, it's an unfamiliar character.
They also have... they also announced... well, I don't think they announced it. They showed some footage, though. DC Studios, a TV arm, Lanterns. Mm.
Yes.
Which is about Green
Lantern. Another crack at Green Lantern.
Powering, but more than one. They've got the Hal Jordan character and the John Stewart character played by respectively Kyle Chandler and Aaron Pierre.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got Guy Gardner in it too, which means Nathan Fillion is popping up again.
Okay, nice.
Love it. Great idea.
Yeah.
Being developed by Damon Lindelof and Tom King for HBO, which means I won't be able to watch it. So, you know. That's all right. Well, I think since we did a bit of a horror riff there, we might play a track.
Yeah, let's do it.
And continuing a bit of a tribute to Sam Neill. This is a title from a track from Event Horizon, and that was a 1997 Paul Anderson movie. And, you know, I just think there's a lot in that film that I don't like, because but there's a lot that I do like, you know, Lawrence Fishburne, Sam Neill, and that line, you know, what happened to your eyes? Where are we going? We won't need eyes to see.
I saw Event Horizon as a kid and it scared me, and I've never watched it again. I don't want to watch it again because I want to keep in my mind how terrified I was by that film. But also I think the wormhole sequence from Event Horizon is the best visual film depiction of wormholes from that era. Taught us all about wormholes. So
I must admit, it's hard to see a good one of those outside of June normally.
Very good.
Hi there, I'm Jen Soska.
And I'm Sylvia Soska.
And we're the Twisted Twins, and you're listening to Zero G on 3RRFM.
Did you love it?
Was it good for you too?
Heck yeah.
We just heard a track from Event Horizon as part of our Sam Neill appreciation and retrospective. That was the track Orbital by Raza. And we're currently going through discussion of some of the Comic-Con news drops, new things coming out. There's loads of interesting new projects ahead on the horizon.
And they showed some footage from Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 4 on Paramount Plus, which has dropped now.
Oh, it's out.
Yeah, two episodes.
Dang, okay.
Two stunning episodes. The first one I'm not going to talk about too much because it'll spoil it, but they encountered dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs are back and big. I feel like there's dinosaurs in a lot of things at the moment.
And the second one was a full-on horror story.
Oh.
Speaking of Event Horizon, the Enterprise discovers drifting in space a derelict Federation starship whose crew were murdered. One of the creepiest episodes of Star Trek they've ever done. And they have had some pretty good horror ones.
Yeah.
One of the scariest old dark spaceship stories I've seen on screen, large or small.
Wow.
I did like it better than Event Horizon.
Props to them, then.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
And they actually have science. also, they brought in I love the way it ended, and there's talk of they need a special division of Starfleet to look into it. And there's this division, I think it's 12, Division 12, that looks after the Scully and Mulder cases that regular Starship crews.
Yeah, right.
Even the Enterprise have difficulty with some things, and they sort of put it off to Division 12.
Yeah, yeah. Like
I want to see that show.
A subject matter expert over there.
I mean, forget Section 31 and its espionage stuff. I want to see Division 12. How do they handle that sort of stuff? Also this season 4 of the last season of Strange New Worlds. Is it 4 or 5? I don't know, whatever. Young Jim Kirk has been interacting with Captain Kirk's Enterprise. Captain Pike's Enterprise. So his future crew, Spock, Scotty and Uhura, are developing their friendships with him. Mm-hmm. So they're putting that within this sort of thing.
Yeah, right, okay.
And this season includes a visit from the all-powerful but irresponsible prankster Trelane, who is one of the Q race.
Mm-hmm.
And La'an is struggling with her genetic superhuman augmentation, which is giving her enhanced strength and healing abilities.
Oh.
She punches a dinosaur.
I mean, I hope she has enhanced abilities if that's the case.
As Dr. Mbenga asks her, are you going to take over the universe now? Writer, actor and director Axel Carolyn directed the horror episode.
Mm-hmm.
And she's worked on American Horror Story, and Something Very Bad Is Going to Happen.
Oh, great. Okay. So juicy. Yeah. Kind of
and Robbie Thompson wrote the script, and he's worked on Supernatural and the spin-off prequel, the Winchesters. So this is all on Paramount Plus, two episodes at the moment.
Nice.
It looks like a great season. Lots of things happening. They get turned into puppets or maybe end up in a puppet universe. I'm not sure.
Okay.
And actually by puppets, I mean Muppets.
Oh, cool. So Henson's okay. Yeah. Like when they had the Liz puppet Muppet in 30 Rock, that one episode. Yeah.
Or Angel.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
A fire-breathing dragon attacks the ship. And I'm wondering, as a deep Star Trek nerd, I wonder if that's what they encounter at the planet of Berengaria 7.
Mm.
So, you know, and they pull out all the stops, basically. Like the dragon does a pass. At
wow. So they're really sparing no expense.
Oh, yeah, because they can't. They don't have to. Mm. They're off. Them and Starfleet Academy, off. Yeah. Now, there is still another season of Academy to be shown, but then Star Trek won't be in production.
Yeah.
Or maybe, cool. Or maybe not, because there is talk of another movie coming out.
Interesting.
Hmm. So, Avengers Doomsday, we saw lots of stuff there.
Yes, what are your... yes, so this is what I wanted to get to, the juicy guts of it all.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on the Doomsday footage, the trailer that's been
dropped? I don't know how they're going to fit everybody into it. They've got Legacy X-Men, they've got Thunderbolts, a.k.a. the new Avengers, they've got Legacy Avengers, they've got the Fantastic Four, you know.
It's a clown car situation. I'm going to be honest, I'm worried. Where is the narrative going to fit inside this film with to juggle the sheer amount of characters and content, you know, like foundational stories we've already been treated to.
They've got Wakandans and Loki and Steve Rogers, which is to say Chris Evans.
Yes.
Perhaps not as Captain America.
As yeah, so we don't know yet, but...
In fact, definitely not, because we're going to have... Anthony Mackie playing his Captain America. He could be playing, Steve could be playing Nomad, which is a version of Cap. You know, and there's lots of stuff around that I don't know. But what can I say? They're going to have Gambit versus Shang-Chi.
It just feels so crowded. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, who will live and who will die?
Well, there's so many of them. Some of them have got to go.
I don't really know what it's about. I know, obviously, RDJ is playing Doctor Doom.
Mm-hmm.
He may be a multiverse variant of Tony Stark.
Yep.
Otherwise, he's going to have to keep his face mask on.
Yeah, well, they'll be, I mean, who knows? Maybe that is the route they're going. But I would assume if you're going to have RDJ, you're going to have to, you want to use that narratively. Yeah,
you don't have to take the mask off.
You don't have to, but it feels a waste.
Hmm.
Sure.
I don't know where that's going, but clearly multiverses are in play.
Yes.
And that can lead us into incursions. Actually, I've got incursions are where these multiverses overlap, and it's dangerous. You can destroy whole planets.
Yes.
If not universes. And that was a big story arc in Marvel Comics.
Mm.
So I'm wondering if Doom is actually going to be the villain, or if he's the guy who engineers it that they – have to come to that really hard decision of whose universes will live and which one will die.
Well, what was the last we saw was the end of credits scene in Fantastic Four, right, where Doom approaches the child.
The child, yeah.
That's about all we saw, didn't we?
Yeah, well, we did see the end credits scene of Thunderbolts where the Fantastic Four come into our universe.
Yes, that's right. So we know – well, but then we see them in the trailer, so we know they're here.
Yeah. I can't actually conceive of a universe with the Fantastic Four in it that doesn't have Doctor Doom as well.
Mm.
You know, it's complicated. So much speculation.
Are you excited about the Doomsday?
Yeah, hell yeah.
I'm cautiously I'm not sure what it is.
Could the Russos stuff this up?
Yes.
You think?
I think so. I do think so. I'm a little worried, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it might be going to the well once too often. But we don't know.
You said it.
We haven't seen it.
We don't know. I think.
And don't forget that it's a setup for the next movie, Avengers movie, which is going to be like, you know, Infinity Wars, Endgame. The next one is this one, and then Secret Wars.
Secret Wars. Yeah. Not Secret Invasion.
Not Secret Invasion.
That happened already.
Yeah. So it can be that massive a thing spread out across that.
Yeah. I just don't know. I think it's also not helped by the fact that it's never going to hit quite as hard as, you know, the Infinity War Endgame.
And we're not talking about where
I think that reached a height that it will struggle to get to this time.
Yeah, any film that doesn't have Iron Man in it can't be any good, basically. I am surprised. I thought that was the end of me in the MCU, but I've enjoyed most of the television series, most of the movies since Endgame. Doesn't necessarily mean that I think they were all the high quality thing. Like some of them, they just didn't know what they were doing, really, like the Eternals.
There was still too much of it.
Probably too much, but I'm a comic book fan.
Yeah.
Never give me too much.
I do think as well, if you're immersed in those stories from the comics, you know, like I do think it's a bit of a deal. I personally, as a film goer, was fatigued. Yeah. So I want this Doomsday to reignite. And even Brand New Day, which we've got now here.
Which we're not talking about.
We'll put that to the side. But I do think that I want to be excited for Doomsday and I really want it to be good.
Yeah.
But I'm nervous, Rob. There's so many disjointed characters in there.
Look, Infinity Wars and Endgame are not just good. They are brilliant.
And they were the culmination of an arc of something that we will likely never see again.
And the arc this time was a bit more convoluted and wobbly in places.
It's a little bit more.
Actors replaced and diversions.
They've had to pivot then. Anyway, we shouldn't linger too long, but yes, we got some Doomsday content. We also got
some visits from Ryan Reynolds in Hall H, who actually cosplayed as Deadpool.
Yes, yes.
arguing that maybe there's a place for Deadpool in this movie. there's a new Black Panther movie with Ryan Coogler directing it.
Yes.
How can that be bad?
And the new Black Panther was really great role in the alien Romulus.
David Johnson playing
it. Yes, and he played the AI
and he's gonna be
android
playing,
in that.
T'Challa and Nakia's son.
Yeah.
Which is a pity because I kind of wanted to see more of Shuri playing the Panther.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll be interested to see where they go with the Black Panther story.
And what about a new Ghost Rider?
Well, Ryan Gosling comes out, the Ghost Rider stuff comes, people lose their minds. From what I've heard, he's pursued this. He really wants to play Ghost Rider. He has a vision for what he feels it could be. Yeah, he's jumping from franchise to franchise right now.
And it's Sean Levy directing it, who did Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah. So
they had no new announcements for TV shows because they are kind of pivoting to the movies. Next month at Disney's D23 Expo, they might talk about that.
Yeah.
But we do know that season two of Wonder Man has been cancelled, even though it was greenlit.
And also season one was quite well received.
Yeah, it was critically acclaimed.
People enjoyed it.
I don't think it got the audience that they wanted it to. God, they got Emmy sort of nominations out of it.
Yeah, I mean, he got an Emmy nod for that. Mm. So I do think you can tell quite clearly they're pivoting back to the films.
But Vision Quest comes out October 14th for Disney Plus, which is the third chapter in the WandaVision trilogy, Agatha all along being the second one.
And then now we've got Paul Bettany playing his Vision role.
I hope they have a visionary director. But
I hope they have a vision for what they're doing.
Did you hear that they cast Samara Weaving, Aussie girl, as Emma Frost?
Yes. I'm excited about that. Mm. I think she'd be quite good.
Because, I mean, the whole thing about – it seems to me like post these Avenger movies that they'll be – pivoting towards the X-Men quite hard.
Which I'm happy with. I've always very much had a soft spot for X-Men. I grew up on the
Yeah, you did.
OG X-Men, what's her name? Anna Paquin once. Yeah. And I did really enjoy, obviously, when we had another go-round with younger X-Men. And why am I forgetting people's names today? Michael Fassbender James McAvoy.
I love the way those two fit together, the two eras.
Yes, they did well. I mean, Days of Future Past was like the pinnacle of that, and then, you know, we dropped off a little bit there. So I'm always keen to see some new, thoughtful X-Men content. So.
As well as getting some of the legacy ones in the Doomsday thing.
Yeah.
We're going to get Beast, Magneto, Cyclops, and also, Gambit, I suppose, is kind
of.
Not really, but yes.
Sort of. He's hovering about the outskirts
he? Mystique as well.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, and not a Jennifer Lawrence Mystique. Different.
No, the first one. She was first, wasn't she? Yeah.
No, it's a different person, I think.
No, it's Rebecca Roman.
Is it?
Yeah. Not Rebecca Roman Stannis because she's not.
Yeah, but I thought it was. In the trailer. For some of the X-Men stuff, it looked like a totally different...
Different makeup. And she's wearing clothes now. She's got a uniform.
I'm going to have to check that. I don't think it was her. But anyway, yeah. I'll take your word for it.
Number one in Star Trek Strange New World. That's who she is.
I mean, she's fab if it is her. Great. Mm. So anyway, yes, new X-Men stuff. I'm here for it. Keep those updates coming.
Well, I've been watching X-Men 97 Season 2 on Disney+, the animated one, which picks up from the old real X-Men Disney 97 stuff, not Disney, but X-Men 97 stuff from the 1990s, like literally picks up with some of the same voice actors, like Storm doing the same roles. And it's brilliant. It is really good. It is everything you want out of superhero television. Mm-hmm. And it makes me kick myself that I never watched the X-Men back in the day. My journey with the X-Men was I read some of the comics in the 1960s,
yep,
and didn't go there. I went for the Fantastic Four and the Avengers instead. So I've only intersected with them in comics in those mediums along the way.
Got it.
And when occasionally they unwisely went versus the Avengers, or wisely as the case may be. And so I missed out on all of that, including that X-Men original cartoons, which were great.
Yeah.
I've watched them now. Oh, anyway.
I'm sorry to have ever doubted you, Rob. You were right about Rebecca Romijn.
Mm.
But to be honest, I thought it was a much younger woman in the footage I saw, so props to Rebecca.
Did you see the trailers for Neuromancer, the TV show on Apple Plus?
Yes, I did. I'm very excited about this, not just because Callum Turner is on my list of, you know, hot young actors to watch.
Really? Okay.
I do like him. I mean, look, I think, anyway, that's not the point here, but I was intrigued to see that he's in this new Neuromancer TV series on Apple TV Plus. I do think Apple TV does make really great science fiction series and series in general.
Yeah.
So I think if they've put effort and money behind this, I'd love to see a really great adaptation of, you know, cyberpunk classic William Gibson's Neuromancer. Were you excited to see this one or?
Look, it's been years since I've read Neuromancer, but yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
But the thing is, of course, that Amazon Prime is bringing out a Blade Runner show.
Yes.
So we're in the same space, really.
Blade Runner 2099. We can have it all. It's okay.
Ridley Scott's not directing it. He's producing it. And it's set after the replicants have successfully revolted and taken control of Los Angeles, at least. Mm-hmm. Maybe more, I don't know. Michelle Yeoh is playing a replicant Blade Runner.
Great.
And she's sort of in the plot is reaching the end of her expiry date. You know, she's getting towards that. And Hunter Schafer plays Cora, who's a partner to this one. Mm-hmm. She was in Euphoria, The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Yeah, great. Well, I think great vibe for this kind of thing.
I should say they were. It looks great too. You know, it looks like a massive sort of production.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to chuck a lot of money at it.
Amazon
money.
It's like blood money, really, when you think about it sometimes.
Ironic in a way, we'll be watching these, like, yeah, dystopian future cyberpunk cities and, yeah.
Yeah. And the Acme and Coyote thing that's on at the
MIFF.
I knew that it had John Cena in it. I didn't actually clock Will Forte in it. What an idiot.
It should be a shame drop.
Yeah, cast of tunes and it looks great, you know. The End of Oak Street, where an American neighbourhood gets thrown back in time to the age of the dinosaurs.
Yes, so that one's actually coming out quite soon on the 13th of August. And another Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway has been booked and busy. She clearly was like, let's get these projects lined up because she's about to have a baby. So she's been very busy. She's in this alongside Ewan McGregor and Maisie Stella, who I really like Maisie Stella. I saw her in a non-genre film called My Old Art. Well, no, it was a bit genre. I think we talked about it. My Old Art. She was in that. So they, as you mentioned, they play a family whose neighborhood is transplanted. Their whole neighborhood's transplanted elsewhere. Sci-fi action. And I think we can say that's somewhere that it's transplanted does happen because it's on the poster.
Yeah.
Happens to have dinosaurs because why not? So it's a survival film. Family must survive in this new Jurassic Street.
Well, I don't know if it's actually Jurassic. We've made issue before with Jurassic Park not actually being set in the Jurassic.
It's period. There's a dinosaur there.
look, it's an American neighborhood. They've probably got a small arsenal. They're not going to have trouble with dinosaurs, are they?
It looks a bit like a gritty Jumanji crossed with like a Jurassic Park type thing. The thing that makes me feel more favourably towards it is it's written and directed by David Robert Mitchell, who directed the very excellent horror film It Follows.
Ah.
So I'm like, okay. all right, interested.
Did you like that film?
Yeah, I love that film. Did you see that?
I have not.
Yes, I would highly recommend, especially because they are currently also making They Follow, a follow-up sequel, and it has Micah Monroe returning for that as well. So she was the protagonist in It Follows. I do recommend that film.
Well, I want to have a track here. Please.
Yes, let's give our voices a rest and hear something.
The theme de Camille, which is Camille's theme, from Le Mépris, which is the French title for Contempt, the Jean-Luc Godard film I mentioned earlier in the piece. And this is by Georges Delerue, who was one of two composers who did two different versions of the soundtrack for this.
Hi, this is Richard E. Grant, and you're listening to Triple R. Cheers and chin chin.
That was Theme de Camille by, what a bad attempt, by Georges Delerue, and that is from Contempt, the Jean-Luc Godard film, which you will speak about next week.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I don't want to show contempt of contempt by just trying to rush through it.
Yeah.
But I did watch it on the back of watching the 1954 Ulysses, and apparently, well, actually, I do know now that Contempt is actually an adaptation of a novel about the making of Ulysses.
Oh.
The author's very bad experiences on the production. Probably not as bad as they're actually in the movie Contempt. But an interesting little sideline going off on a side quest.
That's kind of fun. I did want to mention, I've been watching lots of trailers lately, and one of the ones that I particularly thought was a lot of fun was the new Jessica Chastain film, mm-hmm. Other Mommy. Mommy. It's very, I don't like describing this title outside of the US, but it's called Other Mommy, and it is a supernatural horror film, and it also has J.G. Plass in it, and it's directed by Rob Savage, and it's from James Wan's production company.
Oh.
So it's like a Blumhouse thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be out in Australia in October, but I do recommend watching the trailer. It's about a young girl called Bella who has been seeing this otherworldly presence in her house, but the presence looks exactly like her mother. But it's like a very sinister imaginary friend. So this is not like a benevolent, nice duplicate mother. This is, she's creepy, she's scary, she's doing like moving weird ways and hanging off stuff. It is based on a book called Incidents Around the House by Josh Malerman, which came out a couple of years ago. And yeah, there's definitely some great jump scares in the trailer, which I think sort of lend me to believe the film is going to be a rip-roaring good time of just a bit of camp horror fun. Mm. And Chastain seems to be leaning in really well to playing this kind of, even in the trailer, you're like, is that the real mother or the duplicate mother? So I hope that that is as fun and good as it looks like it will be. Mm. I feel like I want it to be in the realm of like the first Megan film, you know, like very silly but thoroughly enjoyable. So it's called Other Mummy, and it will be out here in a couple of months in October.
I must get around to watching the second Megan film.
Yes, Megan 2.0. I think they're doing another one too, like Teen Megan or something. I don't know, Megan's to infinity.
Pronounce it right, Megan, not Megan. Megan.
I get enough Megans that we should be able to call that movie Megan.
Don't even start on US pronunciation of Moriarty, which is, they say Moriarty.
Oh, no.
No,
no, no, no.
No,
no. What a meander. We've been on our own odyssey through goodness knows what.
10 years later, we've gotten home.
Yeah.
I started playing this last week but didn't leave enough time for it. But this is Ludwig Göransson's Sirens song from the Odyssey, an event which they just skirt through fairly quickly in Nolan's film.
Gosh, that's, with a three-hour runtime, you'd think you could spend a bit more.
My ideal Odyssey is probably like a 10-hour miniseries, and there had been some like that.
Yeah, I bet.
But with Sean Bean playing Odysseus, picking up his Troy role.
Yeah.
I'd like just to know that he's going to live through the film, which is the Odyssey.
You know, so. Well, yeah.
All right, so that's it for Zero G for today. Joe Brunetti coming up next with Astral Glamour. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Rob.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Triple R's Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.